Death's Thief. Written by Oniriad. And read by Litra. A DC's Legends of Tomorrow fanfic. Rated teen. Summary. Death comes to us all. When she came to Leonard Snart, she offered him a job. And then there is light. When the spots finally stop dancing sufficiently in Len's sight that he can focus again, that he can think again, he finds himself rather surprised to be standing several feet away from where he was just standing. The oculus chamber is damaged. The walls are tilting, and there are corpses laying near the entrance, where the time bastards had done their insufficient best to get clear. But all in all, it seems to have been a surprisingly contained blast. Well, it must have been, anyway, since he survived it. Did you? Len whirls around, reaching for his cold gun before he remembers leaving it with Mick, and scowls at the person speaking. It's not a time master. The woman seems to be about Lisa's age, or perhaps a bit younger. Her skin is white as bone, and her clothes black as the emptiness of space. And there's a silver ankh dangling around her neck. "Hello, Leonard," she smiles. "How do you know my name?" he demands, curling his fists for want of a better weapon. "Who are you?" "You know who I am, Len," says the goth, as she sits down on a toppled pillar. "Just think about it for a moment. It'll come to you." He scowls at her, because what sort of non-answer is that? Except, as he looks at her, he realizes he does know who she is. He turns, looks back at the center of the chamber, to where the oculus had been blasted to smithereens. There's something lying by it, something mangled. "I've seen messier," the woman states behind him, matter-of-factly. She tactfully doesn't mention that he's probably been responsible for some of those messes. "A friend of mine told me, not long ago, that dying was lonely, and she'd know." "Dying can be lonely," the woman agrees. "Death doesn't have to be. How is Sarah these days?" "Alive." And he turns back to the woman, scowling again, his hands fists again. "And staying that way." The woman doesn't seem ruffled by his implicit threat. She wouldn't be, he supposes, but it still needs to be made. "You don't need to threaten me, Len. I don't actually mind people getting second chances. Or more than that, it's actually quite nice. I'm a very busy entity. It's not like I have that many opportunities to meet people outside of work." There's just a faint hint of a blush against a bone-white cheek, and suddenly Len can't help but smirk. "She kissed you, didn't she?" The woman doesn't answer, just smiles again. For a moment they stay there, in the oculus chamber, and there's quiet. Then Len sighs. "So, what happens now? Come to drag me to hell?" "Actually, Mr. Snart, I have a proposition for you." He raises an eyebrow at her. "Do you want me to kiss you too?" "Not that sort of proposition, Mr. Snart. A professional proposition." "You want to hire me?" And he hopes that she won't take offense at his incredulity. "For a job?" "Yes, I do. I find myself in need of the services of a thief, so why not avail myself of the opportunity to employ the best?" "What's the score?" "Because this is an insane situation, but why the hell not? It's not like he's got anything better to do right now, is it?" She taps a nail against the silver ankh. "I lost a necklace like this one a while back. It didn't matter so much, except it's fallen into the hands of some people with a little knowledge. and a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Something like that. Not for me, that's not how it works. But the repercussions of what they're planning could have some consequences that I'd rather avoid altogether. Right, he says, because there'll be time for details in the planning stage of this heist, he's sure. Besides, it's doubtful that he's in any sort of position to turn the lady down. Not really. But before he agrees, there's something they need to talk about. And my finder's fee? A second chance. Well, that doesn't sound half bad, given the circumstances. Do we have a deal? And she rises to come and stand in front of him. I want one more thing. Are you trying to bargain with me? She asks, but she sounds amused, not offended. I hear it's traditional. Very well, then. What more do you want? My team. Do they succeed? Do they get to kill Vandal Savage for good? Do you doubt it? And maybe he does, because Rip sucks at planning. But he doesn't say that out loud. Then this is what I want. I want to be there when they do. I want to be the first thing he sees afterwards. And I want my own shot at kicking his ass. Deal? He extends his hand, halfway, waiting for her to tell him no. That she won't tolerate that sort of interference with one of her shades. But then Death smiles at him, and takes his hand in a firm handshake. I believe that can be arranged.
Mick knows he should be moving. Knows he should be rolling, getting back to his feet. Maybe headbutting Bleached Blondie right in the solar plexus. He knows all that, somewhere. A bit in the back of his mind. It's just... he's just a little bit woozy right now. Getting slammed down on the floor pretty much knocked the wind out of him, and damn it, he's not half as young as he once was. He needs a moment, okay? Except Bleached Blondie's standing over him with a knife high like a high priest in some crappy Indiana Jones ripoff, and he's pretty sure this is the last moment he's going to get. End of the road. The knife is plummeting towards him, except... well, it's funny. But it almost looks like there's something trying to stop it. Making BB's hands move in fucking slow motion, as if she's pushing through water or something. He's hallucinating, obviously. But that's what it looks like, okay? Anyway, it's not like the knife is actually stopping. The world becomes a crackling blur, and he's upright again. He really wants to puke. Stupid kid needs to learn to let a fellow brace himself. And sway, and collapse. Except Amaya needs help, and so does the rest of his stupid crew. Better to focus on that than on the too familiar voice that he could have sworn he'd heard say, "Oh no, you don't."
When Wally realizes he's made a terrible mistake, it's already too late. Jessie's raising some sort of futuristic gun at him, her voice going all deep and echoey and spooky and, well, he figures being a speedster, he can handle that, right? If Barry was here, he could totally have outrun that shot. Wally doesn't. Wally gets hit straight in the chest, and the world slows almost to a standstill. It feels like all his limbs have turned to lead. Like his heart is forgetting to beat, and he's forgetting to breathe. He's barely realizing that whatever the hell that gun was, it's stolen away his speed. When something slams into him, pushing him up and back towards the console, he can't even brace himself. He's pretty sure that getting slammed down on the console like that is gonna break his spine. He can survive that, right? Barry survived getting his back broken. He got all better and everything. Wally can totally survive this, right? It's funny, the console isn't nearly as hard to land on as he expected. It even feels like there's some sort of pillow cushioning the back of his neck. His last thought before losing consciousness is about how grateful he is for the really weird places future tech has seemed to put airbags.
Baby speedsters, none of you ever do watch where you're going, do you, kid?
Stupid, stupid, stupid! What had she been thinking? Sarah's going to take us out, one by one. Her own words. Hers. And then she'd wandered off all alone to make it easier for her? Since clearly all she had accomplished was to end up pinned by weird zombie Sarah having her life choked out of her. Zari knows that lack of oxygen to the brain can cause hallucinations. Admittedly, she expected something like that would take longer than 2 seconds, but nevertheless, she could swear that someone has taken hold of her hand. It's like having your hand held by a hand-shaped snowball. Clearly, fighting isn't the answer here. Air totem or not, she's got no chance against this Sarah. But maybe Sarah does. And so Zari starts begging, because surely there must be just a little bit of the Sarah they know inside, right? Team Mom and Captain Lance Sarah? She wouldn't let her stupid, reckless crew member just die without a fight, right? She's Sarah. She never lets anything go without a fight. Funny thing is, for a moment, it actually seems like she's getting through to her. It's like the real Sarah can actually hear her. She lets go of the hallucinatory snow hand and reaches up, wanting to use both hands to get free from zombie Sarah's grip. Except suddenly, it's as if whatever she was getting through to is gone, and zombie Sarah is breaking her hand, and oh, that hurts. Though maybe not as much as it should. As if the hallucination of the hand being a little numb from the cold actually helps. Then Sarah's fist collides with Zari's face, and the lights go out.
John does not regret his plan of action. He'd definitely have preferred if it had worked. That goes without saying. But he doesn't regret it. Well, maybe he regrets it a little, but it's not like the time agents had left him with the impression that he had the time to stop by the old water mill and grab some of his heavy-duty exorcism trinkets. Malice is clearly a higher-level demon, some sort of prince or duke at the very least, probably masquerading under a false name to make fighting him with magic harder. The sort of fiend that requires a little more than a splash of holy water stolen 3 Sundays ago from the nearest Catholic church. A cross. And the faith of a self-proclaimed master of the occult, no matter how many angels he's been bothered by. If he survives this, maybe he should chase down Manny and pluck him a bit. See if an angel feather can be used to fight whatever sort of demon this bloody malice is. If he survives this. Though right now, that's a pretty big if. He can't breathe. Can barely lift his hands. He's dangling a foot or two in the air, and it feels like an enormous claw is wrapped all around him, squeezing the life out of him, and choking him. Let's not forget about the choking. John would really like a breath of air right now. Something touches his lips, and if he didn't know any better, he'd say it feels like lips. Like a tongue forcing its way into his mouth, and, well, even for him this is getting a bit weird. It's not like he'd generally object to some invisible and intangible guy, he's assuming by the slight scratch against his face, giving him a French kiss, but there's a time and a place for everything. Except then Mr. Invisible Man is blowing into his mouth, and somehow the air, cold and brisk, like taking a deep breath outside on a winter's day, is forcing its way down, down into his poor lungs. Mind you, it's a bit of a mixed blessing, considering that he's still getting the life choked out of him, and his new boyfriend, Casper the Friendly Ghost, doesn't seem like it's about to offer any help, apart from the bloody breathing. The death totem flares, blazing white, and John finds himself peremptorily dropped. He staggers to his feet, rubbing his poor throat with the hand that he's not using to support himself against the wall.
"Took him long enough," a vaguely familiar voice grumbles.
"You said it, mate." John agrees and goes to see if either of his time feds are still conscious.
The slow clap makes everybody turn abruptly, which leads to John yelping as Mick's brightly burning flame comes too close and singes his stubble. There's a man leaning, lazy as a cat, against the wall of the Wave Rider. The death totem, and its choker, is dangling from the fingers of his gloved hand. Snart?
Leo?
Len?
Now, what's with the cold welcome home?
The man drawls, lips curling into a smirk.
I know it's taken me a little longer than intended to make it back, but you'd think a guy getting himself blown up for the team wouldn't be welcome back at gunpoint.
Ava's hand doesn't waver as she keeps the gun pointed straight at the stranger's chest. There's a piece of dangling jewelry, bright silver against the midnight blue of the man's sweater, which makes an excellent target to aim for. Leonard Snart died a hero, Sarah says, crossing her arms. You're just Malice's last trick. The knife shivers where it's buried in the wall, right where the man who can't possibly be Len Snart was just standing.
Sarah, stop.
And she pauses before throwing the next knife, glancing sideways at John. I don't think that's Malice. When you were fighting me in the hallway, there was something else there. Something that was trying to help. That was you, wasn't it, mate? The man's smirk widens just a bit, and yeah, John's pretty sure he's right.
Len?
And Mick is coming forward, the dancing flames sliding off his hand like water and snuffing out as they hit the floor.
Yeah, it's me. No hard feelings?
Mick stops, blinks, then raises his right hand and curls it into a fist, takes a step closer and pulls his fist back, then seems to change his mind and lowers it. Shoulders his way past Len, making the other man stagger just a bit.
You ever do something like that again, I'll track down your stupid parka and burn it.
Somehow, Len doesn't look threatened. Len, is that really you? It's funny, Sarah Lance sounding a bit like a little girl, all hopeful and trying not to believe, and not one bit like Malice mimicking poor Astra's voice.
In the flesh.
But you died?
You're one to talk. It's not like I'm the first of us to overcome that little issue.
Amaya still looks skeptical. If you're really the same Leonard Snart that blew up the Oculus, the Snart Mick's been telling me about? Where have you been? It's been 2 years. If you managed to survive, how could you make yourself keep away from your friends for so long? For the first time, the smirk slips. Just a little, but John knows his cold-hearted bastards well enough to tell.
A lady made me an offer I couldn't refuse. Job took a little bit longer than I anticipated. And once it was done, her brother had an offer of his own for me. Like I said, took me a bit longer than I'd intended. But they weren't really the sort you turn down.
Family assholes? Mick rumbles.
Of a sort. Paid well, though.
Well, why didn't you show yourself before? Ava demands. She's lowered the gun, but she's still bristly as a hedgehog. If you could have helped Sarah.
Wouldn't have worked.
Len lifts the hand still holding the death totem, carelessly, as if that tiny bit of evil is nothing to worry about.
Interfering with a totem bearer while they're bonding with the totem is a bad idea. Sarah had to fight her way out herself if she's going to be wielding the death totem going forward.
Entirely predictably, Ava's gun goes straight back up. Sarah is not putting that evil thing back on. Len glances down at the mystical artifact in his hand.
Well, not like this she isn't,
he agrees. But he still starts strolling toward Sarah, utterly ignoring Ava's gun in favor of removing his own necklace. It's a silver ankh, and something is niggling in the back of John's mind. Something about ankhs. As he strolls, Len yanks the death totem off the choker and holds it up to the ankh,
black gem winking through the oval handle at the top of the ankh. Gem and jewelry vanish between his hands. A ring of metal clatters to the floor. Three more steps, and he's standing in front of Sarah, holding out the ankh by the fragile-seeming silver chain. The opening of the handle bit has been filled by something utterly black. The death totem. Impossible as it seems for the previously perfectly round gem to fit in that oval opening.
She asked me to give you a message. Well, two messages.
She? Ava demands, but both her girlfriend and the man she's trying to threaten on her behalf are ignoring her now. John suspects that Sarah will need to grovel long and hard later.
First message, next time you see Malice, she asks that you give him a message from her. That while imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, he's simply not her type.
Okay, I can do that. Sarah's nodding, starting to reach for the remade death totem. And the second message?
She says thanks for the kiss.
And with that, Len lets go of the chain, and the magical bit of bling lands neatly in Sarah's outstretched hand. That's when John remembers exactly what, or rather, who, the ankh is supposedly a symbol of.